Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 169 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Falling Numbers Summit Round 3. Some answers, but a whole lot of questions, too. About presentations by Camille Stieber and Kim Campbell at the Third Falling Number Summit held in Spokane in late January 2020. Stieber is a molecular geneticist with the Agricultural Research Service of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Campbell's title is research geneticist with the ARS, but the industry knows her better as the region's club wheat breeder. Both women are based on the WSU campus in Pullman. If you've listened to my previous two podcasts, you'll know that falling number discounts caused by late maturity alpha amylase, called LMA, are an ongoing challenge in specific wheat-growing regions of the state, with the entire state remaining at risk under specific weather patterns. In those episodes entitled Farmers Can't Stand Another Falling Numbers Punch in the Gut, and The Angst of Ty Jessup, Marketing Manager for Highline Grain, Alex McGregor and Jessup talk about what the challenge has meant to the industry and the consequences of ignoring falling number research. Researchers are applying themselves to finding solutions to both manifestations of low falling numbers, that is LMA and pre-harvest sprout, or PHS. I understand the approach, but I also think that when it comes to farmers, PHS is less of an issue because, frankly, farmers know when it happens. That is, after rain has fallen on a mature crop. LMA, meanwhile, is a largely invisible foe, leaving its mark in the spring, but only revealing the damage at harvest. Not only that, the weather conditions for it to occur have to intersect exactly with the maturity of the crop at a specific moment. Then there's the question of whether a crop with low falling numbers caused by LMA is really damaged. I have talked to enough scientists about falling numbers to know there are disagreements about just how much impact LMA has on end-use quality. To learn more about my LMA quality doubts, listen to episode 87 entitled Same Falling Number Discount but Different Animal, where I interviewed a French researcher based in Australia about his observations of the end-use impact of LMA versus PHS grain. You can find previous episodes by going to the Washington Grain Commission website, wagrains.org, clicking on summaries at the bottom of the page, and navigating back into time. As you'll hear ahead, there's nothing consistent about an outbreak of low-falling numbers caused by LMA, and Eastern Washington has gone for long periods without problems. I tend to think changing weather patterns are contributing to the problem. In episode 168, you heard Ty Jessup suggest that Highline Grain is ground zero for LMA as a result of the location of its farmers and their vulnerability to cold shocks in the spring. Campbell and Stieber each spoke for more than 30 minutes, which is to say this podcast has been edited for length. Like a Netflix series you binge on when it comes out and you haven't watched in 9 or 10 months, it's always good to get a recap, and Stieber did an excellent job at the Third Falling Number Summit of putting everyone on the same page. You'll hear both Stieber and later Campbell refer to PowerPoint slides they are displaying on a screen in front of the room. I have taken photographs of many of these slides and put them on the Washington Grain Commission Facebook page. While you're there, please follow us.
There are two main genetic causes of low falling number. Pre-harvest sprouting, which, like I said, is the induction of germination on the mother plant, and late maturity alpha amylase, which is really a horse of a different color. Both genetically, these things are apples and oranges, and in terms of how they're induced. So LMA is induced by a cold temperature shock during late grain filling. And we're interested in this also from the viewpoint of end-use quality, because some of the literature out there is suggesting that when you have pre-harvest sprouting, you have a much more profound effect on the end-use quality than you do when you have low falling number due to late maturity alpha amylase. One reason that we're interested in maybe alternatives to falling numbers that can actually see the difference between LMA and pre-harvest sprouting as a cause of damage to the grain. We went for nearly 10 years without an episode of low falling numbers, or with only a single episode of farmers receiving discounts for falling numbers. And then in 2010 and 2011, we started seeing this problem emerge. In 2013, we had a fairly large pre-harvest sprouting event, but the real problem happened in 2016 when it's been estimated that farmers lost about $140 million to the combined problems due to LMA and pre-harvest sprouting in that year's crop. So we began in 2017 with what we called the Falling Numbers Summit, to have a workshop to figure out what were the industry objectives, research objectives, that we needed to meet in order to address this problem. Since then, we met for a Falling Numbers workshop in 2019 and again this year. And the point of this meeting is to talk about how we're doing in terms of meeting those goals. So this is the survey from this year, going from the worst was Creston in purple down through red to Pasco in green, which had really good falling numbers. You can see that along Highway 2 here, we had a lot of problems with pre-harvest sprouting in 2019. We had fairly good falling numbers out in the drier part of the state, but some problems. It almost looks like a storm system came through here, and that's its trail, right? There are a lot of potential sources for variation in falling number. Low protein levels can give you lower falling number. Differences in starch composition, so if you have a high ratio of amylopectin to amylose, you can get a lower falling number. Biological variation leads to a lot of variation in falling number. You can have variation over the field itself that was detected here with an NIR due to microclimates. You know, these problems are dependent on where the grain is in its development. And since the wheat in the field matures at different rates, depending upon microclimates, you get a lot of variation for falling number within a field. Finally, differences in barometric pressure when you're running the test, and differences in how the procedure is done can lead to problems, which is why one of our first objectives from 2017 for improving the falling numbers test itself was to see a revision of the FIGAS directive to have really more precise, a more precise protocol. And I think in some ways based on improvements that were made by the Washington State Department of Agriculture. And that has happened. A new directive came out in May 2019 that I think addresses a lot of the problems, including the problems with variation due to barometric pressure. It used to be that this was accounted for using altitude tables. So you corrected your falling number after you ran it to what the falling number would have been at sea level using altitude tables, but those tables went in fairly large increments. So Stephen Delwich, USDA scientist in Beltsville, Maryland, developed this equation here that allows you to correct continuously for barometric pressure. And so our hope is that that will improve our falling numbers. At the time, people said they wanted an improvement of the CV from 5% to 1%. Andrew Ross will tell you that this may not be a realistic objective. I don't think we're there yet. The standard currently in the FIGAS directive is that your two samples run at the same time should be no different, have no larger difference than a 5% difference. Otherwise, you have to try again. So LMA, like I said, is a horse of a different color. Rain on a mature grain will give you germination, but in the case of LMA, a cold shock event during the soft dough stage of grain filling will give you induction of alpha amylase, and you'll never see any sign of visible sprouting, but you can get a low falling number out of that. There is a physical difference between these two things in that germination is triggered by hormones from the embryo. GA is released by the embryo. It causes expression of alpha amylase in the aleurone layer, so you always get higher amounts of alpha amylase at the embryo end when it's seed germination. So here you see higher at the embryo end, very low at the brush end at a falling number of 88. So with late maturity alpha amylase, you get random patches scattered around the aleurone layer and fairly similar levels of alpha amylase at the brush and embryo end.
Stieber talks here about the difficulty of obtaining LMA expression in wheat plants. As I said earlier, climatic conditions have to line up perfectly. To do that efficiently, Stieber said, means actually looking at the kernels in the plants. And that research discovered something else in the process.
Initially, we were moving everything at 26 days past anthesis because that had been published as the sensitive time point, according to the Australians. Since then, we've gone to carefully checking if the seeds look like they're at the right time point, round about the 24 to 26 day past anthesis point. Then we move them into a cold chamber for 7 days at a 64 degree day and a 45 degree night, then return them to the warm chamber to mature, and then perform Fadibus alpha amylase enzyme assays, 3 single spikes per line. One of the reasons that we're doing this, where we check the actual seed itself, is because we found that a major source of variation in our work has been due to the fact that different varieties hit their LMA induction window at different times. So here's Kennedy spring wheat. It hits its window at the 26 to 30 days past anthesis point. This northwest breeding line, Washington 8124, between 20 and 24 days past anthesis.
Stieber is not a breeder. She's a geneticist. But she and Kim Campbell, who is a breeder, have been tag-teaming the falling number challenge since 2013. Stieber's research has helped inform approaches that wheat breeders can take to make their varieties LMA resistant.
We need to know how well our markers work in predicting LMA in the breeding programs. I've found that LMA susceptibility seems to be defined by variability in alpha amylase levels, and that the timing of the window varies a lot with cultivar, season, and experiment, and is probably the major source of variation in this research, which makes me think that in the future we should throw the window out the window and instead work with these lines that have constitutive LMA, tall by tall crosses resistant to LMA always on, so that hopefully in the progeny we're looking at black and white, not shades of gray. We have in the meantime also detected something else. So when we did our field LMA testing, we had low falling numbers, which was what we were after, but we found that we had visible sprouting, which I found strange because it means that wheat that was at the soft dough stage was germinating. So we checked whether these things could germinate, and it turns out that between 21 and 28 days past anthesis, you can get germination of wheat if you apply water. So we're not safe from pre-harvest sprouting, or vipery if I call it that in this case, when the wheat is actually in the grain filling stage. I really need to know how big of a connection is there between pre-harvest sprouting tolerance and resistance to this vivipary phenotype. Is there any connection to LMA? And will I be able to tell the difference between the two?
Research into the cause of one thing often results in the discovery of something else. The fact wheat kernels can start to germinate during a period of time after anthesis was news to me. What an amazing plant this wheat of ours is. Stieber spoke about ongoing research to identify falling numbers grain more quickly, including work with a hyperspectral camera to identify individual grains. But as she put it, we're not there yet. That is a hope for the future. Campbell talked about research showing the variability and inconsistent consistency of varieties within the falling numbers matrix, not to mention the plain old mystery that surrounds the LMA phenomenon. Take, for instance, research looking at whether falling numbers improves with storage. Although some believe the result is associated with heat and pressure in storage bins, listen ahead as Campbell talks about research that investigated storing grain in a freezer.
We've had a lot of discussion, and actually it was brought up earlier today, when you store grain, do the falling numbers increase? And actually, yes, they do. So what this is a comparison of our standard. And before we started using the cornstarch standard, I don't even know if we're using the corn, but we should switch to it, all right? But anyway, the way we would make the standard that we run every time when we run the falling numbers is Tracy would blend wheat to get to a falling number of 300, or as close as she could get there. So we had a sample of Stevens that had very high falling numbers, and we had a sample of SY Ovation that had low falling numbers, and she basically blended it and tested it, blended it and tested it, until she got to 300. And so what she did then, that actually ended up, I think, being a 50-50 blend, all right? So, and this was of the grain, and then she milled it and then went ahead with the falling numbers. So this is in time. So this is the first sample. Then she took that grain, and she put it in the freezer in sealed up bags, so no air in the freezer. And then 3 months later, she pulled it out, put it back together in a 50-50 blend, same way. And this is the falling number from 3 months later. And as you can see, over time, each time she does that, it goes up, all right? And so my point here is that storing it in the freezer doesn't stop this process.
There has been an immense amount of research looking at falling numbers at different locations in eastern Washington. Part of what has been found, according to Campbell, is that some sites are more likely to have low falling numbers caused by LMA than others.
There's certain locations where we almost always have issues. Mayview is one of them. Reardon is another one. Almost every year, regardless, even 2017 or whichever year, yeah, which was a good year, we had issues at Reardon. So we've talked a little bit about weather data, and we're prioritizing those locations to make sure we're slowly putting weather stations at all of these locations, but we're prioritizing the ones where we know we have problems every year. And the green bars are all of the places where there really wasn't an event. All the grain was over 300. The red ones are when we likely had an LMA event, because we either didn't see any rain, or Camille did the half seed test assay where she figured out if the LMA was distributed around the whole grain or mostly localized at the embryo end. And then the blue bars are where we had pre-harvest sprouting, where we could see it. And as you can see, pre-harvest sprouting does tend to cause much lower falling numbers, but not always. Sometimes we get bad ones with the LMA. So we have to go through this and try and figure out what to do when we're trying to identify lines as breeders that we want to cross with and move on. And I know growers have to do the same thing, but we're a little upstream. This way, this factor analytic approach, where we can throw all this data together and come up with relationships among the environments, and then use those relationships to kind of adjust the average values to account for the fact that a line was in an environment or wasn't in an environment and things like that. And I think we might have published this graph in Wheat Life last year, but what she was able to do then is, this is the overall falling number performance. So the lines up here have higher falling numbers overall. And this is a decrease in stability. It's a measure of how variable the line is in the various environments. And the good thing, I know this is another complicated slide, but the good thing about this data is that when we have more resistance, the lines are more stable. So, because see, there's this relationship here. So the really variable lines are the lines that are pretty susceptible to low falling numbers. Like Briel is here, Zerf is over here, it bops up and down, UI Magic, this KXBO1 that was pretty good. And the really good lines, here's 456. I like to point out, there it is, Crescent, because I work with Club Wheat, so there you go. And so that's good. The lines that that are better are more stable. So breeders like to know, when we look at all of the variation, is it due to genetics? Is it due to genetic by environment interaction? Is it due to just problems with the test? Where's the variation coming from? So what we found out is 21% of all the variation in this data is due to genetics, due to the variety. And then 24% is due to environment by classification, and the classification is that no event, LMA, PHS. So there's a lot of variation that goes on depending on what class you're in. And then there's not replication within an environment. So this data was all, we ran two reps from every environment. It's actually a very low percentage, so that's kind of good news. And then variety by classification was low. Variety by environment was 16. So the varieties are changing from one environment to another. We all know that. And then the error is about 26%. So what we end up here is a heritability or repeatability of between 30 and 40%, depending on how you do the math. All right. Now, that doesn't sound very high, but I know another trait that has a heritability or repeatability about that same amount. And I'm going to ask the breeders if you can think of what it is. Grain yield, right? Have we been able to improve grain yield over time? Yes, okay. So we're used to dealing with this kind of variation. So I'm not too frightened by this, all right? We just need to do the experiments right. My suggestion going forward as breeders is we do need to do this selection in the mid part of the program, but I think for right now we should concentrate on pre-harvest sprouting, because the other thing is when you look at the genetics, if you have good resistance to pre-harvest sprouting, you tend to have good resistance to LMA. Not always. There's a few lines that are pretty good for sprouting and really bad for LMA, but most of the time, if you pull one over, you get the other one. So at least gives us a way to do something, because otherwise we just have to keep throwing our hands up and go, we need more data. So I guess what I'm trying to say is the news is better than what you might think. All right. So we have enough data to rank the cultivars, and I think this method of doing it, it's very simple. As soon as we get the 2019 data in, I can add it to it and we can post it on the web. And I think we do have enough data now to provide the information to the seed buyer's guide through Clark Neely. We are exploring the weather data to develop prediction models. That's going to take some time. Standards change with time, so run good standards all the time when you're running falling numbers. We have several good sources of genetic resistance. And we've identified several useful loci with all of our QTL mapping studies. The spreadsheet where all of those loci are compiled goes on for 6 pages. So we need to figure out which ones are in our germplasm. We're getting closer to that. And like, for example, one really good source of resistance in our germplasm in the soft whites is closely linked to the club gene. So if we just make everything club, you could say, okay, make everything club, right? However, you've got Brio out there, so there's something else going on, all right? So we've got, it's more than one gene, but, the other thing is, we really need to figure out this emergence low falling numbers association. That's still the big elephant in the room. And we suspect, because of the data that Aaron and I have looked at, we know there's a negative correlation. And we know if you can't get the crop out of the ground, you're not going to worry about falling numbers, all right? So you got to get the crop up out of the ground. It's got to get through the winter. It's got to survive stripe rust, you know. It's just the whole process that has to happen. But we think there's some room for creative breeding in there, and we think what we need to do is select first for the resistance to pre-harvest sprouting, I'm going to say, because we can do that in F2s and F3s. I don't think we can select for resistance to LMA with our current tests with F2s and F3s, but sprouting we can. Yeah, and then go out and plant everything as deep as we can at Lind and see what comes up.
I always learn something new by attending Falling Numbers summits, and Campbell's presentation was the first time I heard of the correlation between low falling numbers and emergence in areas that plant seed deep and depend upon a long coleoptile to make it to the surface. What a complicated web Mother Nature weaves. Be sure to check out the slides I posted on the Washington Grain Commission Facebook page to find out which varieties are resistant to low falling numbers and which are susceptible, and the discoveries of ongoing research. I'm continuing with my Falling Numbers Summit month of podcasts, so please join me here again next week for another episode of Weed All About It.
We are all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in its head. Through a history of starvation and times of want and woe, wheat has been our savior, our grub, our gruel, our dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when it's not enough wheat. We feed you.